It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are off and running for this 25th day of June, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where we've got the little tab you can click called Chat Room. And if you pick out a screen name and a password, by Jove, you can jump into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Doing so, you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space into the blazing heat of Northern California summer. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And so the party will then be well underway. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic or Trump-tanic Tuesday, depending on your preference for the term. You know, we celebrate moments of full steam ahead into that there iceberg on Tuesdays here, and like every other similar Tuesday, we have spectacular examples. Oh, yes. Yes, we do. And with that in mind, the idea that there are spectacular... So, something happened at the White House today. You would have thought it would have been a sort of solemn ceremony. We don't give away a whole lot of Congressional Medals of Honor. But today, there was a ceremony for a Congressional Medal of Honor recipient at the White House, a veteran of the Iraq War, the illegal Iraq War. Remember... started as a matter of choice by dim leader George W. Bush because they tried to kill my daddy. Remember? Yes, of course. So there's a Medal of Honor citation that tells whatever it is that the member of the military did to earn the medal. And it's a litany of the feats of warfare that the recipient... performed. Well, let's just go to the audio, shall we? Because, you know, we talk almost constantly about the 25th Amendment, about the obvious degradation of whatever it is that passes for a brain sloshing around between the ears of Donald J. Trump. And this is almost aphasic. Aphasia, I believe, is the term they use when you're trying to talk, but your brain isn't working. And so even though you're trying to say words, they're not coming out of your mouth as words. Usually it happens in a situation where one is not reading from a prepared script. This time, of course, the nitwit Nero had a script on the teleprompter.
Next, two more insurgents came out of hiding and fired at David. He returned fire, killing them both. Then a third assailant burst out of a wardrobe, wearing a wardrobe, and opened fire. David shot and wounded the man, but he escaped up the stairs. Racing after him, David engaged in hand-to-hand combat and killed him too. Bleeding and badly wounded, David had single-handedly defeated the forces who had attacked his unit and would have killed them all had it not been for the bravery of David.
You caught that, I trust. Donald Trump doesn't know what a wardrobe is, except to use the term to express one's collection of clothing. The lion, dadgummit, why can't I remember? The author, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, T.S. Lewis, does not refer to the clothing that the lion and the witch were wearing. A wardrobe is a piece of furniture. Donald Trump, who has an IQ at best in the high 80s. What? Yeah. Thought he was correcting whoever wrote the citation who misused the term wardrobe as he understood it. I wish this was just funny, but it isn't. This is an indication of a failing brain that happens to be attached to the person who has the power to end all life on planet Earth. Let's go back.
Next, two more insurgents came out of hiding and fired at David. He returned fire, killing them both. Then a third assailant burst out of a wardrobe, wearing a wardrobe, and opened fire. David shot and wounded the man.
See, if you know, as we all do, that a wardrobe is a piece of furniture, then the idea of some wild-eyed fundamentalist Iraqi walking around with a heavy piece of probably wooden furniture around it. Well, the best I can come up with is, wasn't there a talking wardrobe in Disney's animated Beauty and the Beast? I'm pretty sure there was. I mean, there was the candelabra, and there was Chip, the little chipped cup, and Mrs. Potts, who was a teapot. But there was... Was it the butt? No. Who was the walking wardrobe? And it's the fact that he thinks that because this is a personality thing. He thinks that his staffer who wrote this script has screwed up by saying jumping out of a wardrobe. So he corrects it to wearing a wardrobe. And the poor human being who has been awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor has to sit there stone-faced, probably triggered, reliving that horrifying day, because no one gets up in the morning and says, you know what I want to do today? I want to go out and get into shit so deep that if I survive, I'm going to get me a Congressional Medal of Honor, by golly. That's what I'm going to do. Nobody does that. And in that moment, but I feel sorry for the sergeant having to stand there with his hands clasped behind his back as he learns in real time just how inexpressibly stupid the President of the United States, who in matters martial serves as the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, is. This just sort of begged to be the lead for this Titanic Tuesday. And it sort of dovetails with another Trumpian moment. I know there are so many other stories, but Jesus. It was earlier today when some member of the multimillionaire for-profit media triggered him, I guess. Or the fact that one of his staffers handed him a statement by the Iranian leadership, particularly Al Jazeera English, translated from the Farsi, a statement by Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. President Rouhani saying the White House actions mean it is mentally retarded. Mm-hmm. Well, this prompted the nitwit Nero to say the following on Twitter.
Iran's very ignorant and insulting statement put out today only shows that they do not understand reality. Any attack by Iran on anything American, whether wearing or not wearing a wardrobe, okay, I added that part, will be met with great and overwhelming force. In some areas, overwhelming will mean obliteration. No more John Kerry and Obama.
And yet it was just another day that ends in Y for the enablers of this madness over in the Senate. I got a little giggle at the beginning of the shortly before the beginning of the program via our buddy Michael in Madison, who also took note of this this statement. Trump warns Iran against attacking anything American. Our buddy Michael in Madison said, the Ayatollah's going to tweet Lee Greenwood sucks, and the next thing you know, it's global thermonuclear war. But here's the problem. I don't like being in the position of having to agree with a religious maniac. And Iranian President Hassan Rouhani did not get to be president of Iran by being a cool and reasonable individual with atheistic tendencies. Cool and reasonable individuals with atheistic tendencies don't get to be president in Iran because Iran is a theocracy. And so that pretty much means anybody involved in government is going to be a religious lulu. kind of like being a Republican here. So, when the president of Iran says that he believes that the president of the United States is mentally retarded, that's a hard sled. Because you really can't mount a compelling counter-argument to the statement. And having argued, or having stated, that they believe the president of the United States to be mentally retarded, Donald Trump gets on Twitter and proves it for them.
The wonderful Iranian people are suffering, and for no reason at all. Their leadership spends all of its money on terror and little on anything else. The U.S. is...
spends all of its money on terror. I mean, do they have, like, terror dens or Terror R Us or Terror Mart?
The U.S. has not forgotten Iran's use of IEDs and EFPs, bombs, which killed 2,000 Americans and wounded many more. And their ignorant, insulting statement...
Well, you know, I didn't use the word accurate, but that's the problem. Iran's accurate statement that the president of the United States is probably mentally, developmentally slow, delayed. Yeah. As proven by the fact that he corrected on the fly, jumped out of a wardrobe into wearing a wardrobe. And poor, poor Sergeant David Belavia. You know, it was probably his after-action account, or one of his teams, that originally used the word wardrobe. A wardrobe is a closet that's freestanding. I would know this because we have several of them in our house, because when this house was built in the 1930s, the way they taxed your house was not based upon square footage or fair market value, but rather the number of rooms you had. And they counted closets as rooms. I guess because in the 1930s, theoretically, you could sleep in a closet. Ah, C.S. Lewis, not T.S. Lewis. Thank you. And so this house has no closets. It has instead a wardrobe in every bedroom. And that's what we call them, wardrobes. But for all of his fascination with Baroque furnishings, the stupid fucker has probably never heard anyone refer to a freestanding closet as a wardrobe. See, Steve heard something else. Steve in New York. Sorry to help, but did I hear him say surgeons? Yes, not insurgents, but surgeons. I know. Steve wants to know. I'm awful, but how does a single person wear an entire wardrobe? And again, I was the T-S-C-S-T-S, and so I crossed T.S. Eliot with C.S. Lewis and came up with T.S. Lewis. It happens. David in South Carolina, Stan, subject line, cool vocab. I think a salient is cool vocabulary usage as well. I have no idea what that noise was. Steve says, my last email, I promise. Oh, don't let it be your last, Steve. It occurs to me that these incidents have, in fact, gone from funny and startling to alarming and scary. Well, yes, with us teetering on the brink of war, and I'll see your alarming and scary and raise you an existentially terrifying. Kyle with a note. Wait, did Orange Asshole really accuse someone else of not understanding reality? I'm not often speechless, but I have no words. Just make it stop. And that's the problem. We seem powerless to do that. Because, well, we have learned over the ever since January the 20th, 2017, we have learned to our manifest distress, the furthest outer limits of the functionality of the Constitution of the United States of America. It could not tolerate, it could not withstand an assault from a criminally oriented, mentally slow, egomaniacal, megalomaniac, narcissist. If we could dial up little Jimmy Madison and Al Hamilton and that crowd, the smartest member of the Constitutional Convention, of course, was Benjamin Franklin. And if we could inquire of him, perhaps the answer would come back, listen, bub, no constitution can be crafted in such a way as to make them impervious to the kind of person that you just mentioned. Constitutions only work if everybody else is determined to make it work and to see its safeguards preserved as vibrant and meaningful. Well, here we are. And in point of fact, we have an entire half of the political spectrum that is so enamored of its own power, that it doesn't care what happens to the Constitution. And in fact, its concern for the Constitution extends only so far as what the Constitution can do to further empower them. I can't let go of the comparison between the impeachment of Bill Clinton and the non-impeachment of Donald Trump. It's breathtaking. First out of a wardrobe, wearing a wardrobe. I mean, we would not be helpless if the government structure had not evolved from its beginnings to this particular moment in which everything is some sort of stylized ritual, as opposed to a living process. This moment, these moments through which we are living, are the perfect example, or a perfect example of the debate between the philosophical schools of thought, one of which was once led by fat dead Tony Scalia, who said the Constitution is dead, 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 dead. It's not a living document. Well, this is what you get if the Constitution is dead, 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 and not a living document. If it's all just a ritualized shadow play, then whoever wants to do whatever to it is free to do so. as long as about half the government is unwilling to do anything to defend it. And this is one such moment in which we can look at the entire Republican Party in the Senate of the United States, and we can make one factual statement about them all. The Republican members of the Senate of the United States of America are unwilling to uphold their oaths. Not one of them, upon entering the Senate of the United States, ever took an oath to protect and defend whoever happens to be the occupant of the White House. The object of one's faith upon ascending to a high congressional office is not a religion, but rather is faith in an institution as manifested by a fairly brief document, and that document is the Constitution. Well, thank you, Kath. Note from Kath, it must be wonderful to live with a brilliant wordsmith like you and your family. In my ideal world, you would be heard at least as often as those on Fox News spouting Nazi shit. Well, I don't know if I'm the guy to do that, but I'm here 3 hours Monday through Friday, and, well, tell the friends and neighbors, and who knows how much word knowing we might get out there. Thank you, Kath. That's awfully kind of you. So that's our starting place, and I screwed up this evening because every program here is supposed to begin with thanks. And thanks there are to be extended. And in this particular instance, those thanks are with regard to our subscribers for the 25th day of the month. That would be Jim in Spain, Kay, and Mark. And thanks to our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, and thanks to Janice. Our fundraising goal is down to $160, or $140, $140. And remember, at the end of the program last night, there was a challenge on the table, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut, a founding member of the sorority of Leans, who said if you would come up with the 80, it was 80 then, that she would knock down the other 100 and we'd be done with fundraising. So that's, I presume, Darlene's okay with that remaining on the table. And then that'll give us Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday for fundraising free radio, which is nice. I just wish we'd had the whole week. Okay, so thanks to our subscribers, and thanks to Janice and Joy for jumping in on an ad hoc basis. By the way, I had a note from Joy, and it bears repeating, because it is profound. The message is as follows. Even many of my lefty friends are asking me, why are the refugees coming to the U.S. when they know they're going to be treated badly here? The cruelty is the point. Doesn't seem to be reducing their numbers. The answer to that is the same answer to the question, why did all those people jump out of the towers on 9/11? It's really important, Joy says, for everyone to understand this. And it is important. It is that moment in which one ponders how desperate one's situation would be to walk out of the frying pan knowing that the fire awaits. There's also probably an element of disbelief among those who are fleeing the hell in their own land. That no matter what they've heard, it can't possibly be as bad as what they've been told. But it is as bad as what they've been told. And worse. Among the better impulses of the American people is the desire to make things better in a bad situation. And so, having heard about the hell on earth that has yawned open in regard to the innocents whom we are tormenting, there were people who, no, they didn't march around the compound with signs and tiki torches or things that say, "You will not replace us." No, they took a practical approach to the matter. And so they gathered diapers and wipes, and they brought toothbrushes and toothpaste, dental floss, combs, brushes. Necessities of life for little human beings. And they took them to these centers where they were summarily rejected. The people on the babies on the inside did not have these things, certainly did not have anything resembling a surfeit of these things. But the people in power well, they refused it. Because that's the country we are now. Because somebody probably would have lost their damn job. Had they accepted those necessities. I'm sure everybody's sick and tired of seeing that Bible, seeing and hearing those Bible verses from Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. He took a dim view, apparently, if he was real. He took a dim view of mistreating children. But that's where we are in this country. That is who we are in this country. And so when Joy says they come here for the same reason that the people jumped out of the buildings on 9/11, it could not be more true. There was the certainty. There was certainty on the one hand and uncertainty on the other. And in situations where there is certainty of death and uncertainty on the other hand, a human being will almost always choose the uncertainty, even if it is only ephemerally uncertain. Thanks for that, Joy. Thanks for that. Sanctions and demands, a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. That orange tow rag in the Oval Office is demanding that the leaders of Iran do what they were doing anyway before he tore up the agreement that they were complying with. Dimwit Donnie wants Iran to completely disarm and allow Mohammed Bonesaw and his cohorts in the UAE and Israel to run roughshod on anyone they choose in the region. I take it you saw the first installment of Jared's so-called Middle East peace plan that reads more like a real estate deal. I'm on the side of the Iranians in this. I know. We tend to look at people, at issues cogently and sanely, and it's hard to disagree with the people who are behaving sanely. And in this case, the Iranians are the sane people. And we, with our pal Prince Bonesaw, we're not. Darlene confirmed that the challenge does still stand. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very, very kindly. And I can happily announce that it has been met. And that is courtesy of Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very, very kindly. So, hey, fundraising free radio for three programs and 2 hours and 24 minutes and some seconds. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Titanic Tuesday. And there are, well, there's the sea list doesn't look so much like a sea as it does a cocktail glass with a lot of ice cubes floating in it. Jumping Jehoshaphat. The business with wearing a wardrobe wasn't the only insanity of the day. And if this were Moran Monday, there would be a nomination here for The Hill. For whoever passes as a journalist who asked this question. Or maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe by asking questions like this that in a former era no responsible journalist would ever ask. Maybe this shines a further light on just how bad off this president's mental health is. Now, this is the same interview in which Julius Geezer declared that he couldn't possibly have raped E. Jean Carroll because she's
not my type.
Confessing therein that there is a type of woman which he, Donald Trump, would be happy to rape. And there was video of this. I'm not going to fool with queuing it up or anything because this is just bizarre. So somewhere along the way, this genius member of the multimillionaire for-profit media asked him, Trump, and there are so many things to ask. I mean, did they just run out of questions? They've all been asked and answered, so you got to come up with something fresh? Honest to Jesus, I have no idea. But the question was asked of him, Mr. President, do you think, I mean, God, I'm so old. I'm so old that we used to have Republicans, waving hankies and snorting smelling salts. You used to talk about things like removing FDR from the dime and replacing it with Ronald Reagan, or maybe putting Ronald Reagan on Mount Rushmore. Now we just go straight to the babbling insane source. And so it was that The Hill, a journalist, journalist there, asked Donald Trump whether he felt that he, Donald Trump, should be carved into, I find this difficult to say, Mount Rushmore. Can we agree that that question is just plain nuck and futz? Can we agree that that question is crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass? Can we just say to ourselves, gosh, if I was a member of the multimillionaire for-profit media and I got a chance to ask Donald Trump a question, that's the question I would probably never ask. Or is this 11D-dimensional chess? And because it's 11D-dimensional chess, it's a way of getting him to show us just how long gone he is. So they asked the question.
If I answer that question yes, I will end up with such bad publicity. I'll probably jump out of a wardrobe wearing a wardrobe.
No, I added that part. Okay, so leave it alone.
If I answer that question yes, I'll end up with such bad publicity. Next question.
But no. Every question is an opportunity to extemporize and to display for all of America that big good boy brain that his mommy and daddy always told him that he had as a way to keep from having to confess to him that, well, that he was an idiot within the class, the formerly brutal mental retardation classification system. In Winston Groom's original novel of Forrest Gump, Forrest Gump freely admits that he is an idiot. But that's because Forrest Gump was not just an idiot. He was an idiot savant. In Donald Trump, we have the idiot without the savant part. Here's what comes after, I will end up with such bad publicity.
Well, look, I have a lot of respect.
That was his word of the day in this interview, respect. Because when he was asked about the E. Jean Carroll allegation of rape,
he said, I say this with great respect. She's not my type.
So one spirochete had a hold of the word respect and just kept slapping it against the inside of his the inside of his skull, and somehow or not. So we get two uses of the word respect in this interview.
Well, look, I have a lot of respect. Even Mount Rushmore.
What, Edith, huh?
Look, I have a lot of respect, even Mount Rushmore. So for many, many years, they had fireworks, right? Many, many years. And your new governor, she's a great person. She called, she said, sir, for many years, we had tremendous fireworks on the 4th of July. We don't have it anymore. Can you do something? And I got it approved. Starting next season, it was not easy, starting next season, Mount Rushmore will have tremendous fireworks like they had for many years. But they ended it a long time ago, but they didn't have fireworks because, I don't know, I think they thought the stone was going to catch fire.
I want desperately to think that in some other earlier America, an answer like that would have sent members of the House and Senate screaming to the law library to find something, some way, to deal with the fact that the president... But you know what? Our history isn't really like that. Our history, in fact, is a history of a president who had had a stroke, who was incommunicado, who was barely even of this world, and whose wife conspired with a doctor to make sure that no one could see that her husband was incapacitated and therefore let the government hang fire. And a vice president, Thomas Riley Marshall, who begged by the Congress said, "You pass me a law that tells me I can assume the powers of office, and I will." But the Congress, the Republican Congress, was too chicken shit to do that. Again, that's part of why we have the 25th Amendment. Perhaps, and if I do seem this way, I heartily apologize. I am not trying to underemphasize the horrors transpiring at the border. I'm not trying to minimize the dangers we face because of an unnecessary confrontation with a foreign power in the western end of Asia, Iran. But all of those things flow from this thing. All of those things flow from the fact that the man in the White House ain't okay. The man in the White House has probably never been okay. He has been coddled and protected by access to wealth so that no one was able to tell that he was short on those attributes which we say makes a person fully functionally okay intellectually and mentally. And down at the bottom there,
I think they thought the stone was going to catch on fire.
That's another snide, shitty little backhanded reference to the fact that he has no regard whatsoever for the natural world. Because the reason they stopped having fireworks at Mount Rushmore, and by the way, Donald Trump had not a goddamn thing to do with them starting to have them again. They stopped doing fireworks at Mount Rushmore in 2010 because drought, climate change, had rendered the area so dry that a falling spark from a fireworks mortar round could have wound up toasting the whole area. The Argus Leader of South Dakota, the newspaper of record there, says that the state thinks it's okay, it'll be okay to have fireworks at Mount Rushmore again, because some of those drought conditions have been alleviated and the forest has come back to something more resembling its normal state. And there have been changes in the pyrotechnics used in fireworks display that make it less likely that the fireworks will set off a massive blaze. So it was an entirely rational decision to not have potential forest fire kindling fireworks displays. But wouldn't you love to know, you know, it's still this vicious little prick thinks that they were just being sissies because
they thought the stone was going to catch on fire. And, you know, the stone could crack and Lincoln's nose could fall right off.
And, of course, there's a backstory to Mount Rushmore. And, no, I'm not talking about, North by Northwest. God, I love that movie. No spoilers. The movie's only 60 or 70 years old, but no spoilers. It's the 50s, so what, it's 60-some-odd years old? Uh, there's a backstory to Mount Rushmore of a great deal of abuse of lands sacred to the native peoples there. And then there's the question of the four people who were on it. George Washington? Okay. Thomas Jefferson? All right. Added South Dakota via the Louisiana Purchase to the United States of America. That makes some sense. Lincoln? Certainly. What the hell is Teddy Roosevelt doing there? Yeah. But and by the way, the guy who did Mount Rushmore, his warm-up act was Stone Mountain, Georgia, and carving a bunch of traitorous Confederate generals into the side of a mountain. And now you know the rest of the story. Steve in New York heard that line. Stone was going to catch fire. Wait a second. Are you saying he actually said that? Someone didn't make that up? No, he said that. That's quoted. That's in the Hill interview. And remember I told you that it was 2010 when they suspended the fireworks displays. Don't fail to note that 2010 is, according to Nitwit Nero,
a long time ago. They ended it a long time ago.
9 years? I mean, granted, I'm one of those older Americans now. I'm all of 56. But a long time ago is... I don't know. There's no standard for a long time ago, I guess. But 9 years is not a long time ago. The older I get, 9 years becomes day before yesterday. But then again, I've got a bit of a background and a little bit of training in anthropology and archaeology, so it all becomes really fluid to me. 1802 is not a long time ago. 102 is a long time ago. But 9 years? But he does, that's the thing. He didn't know it was 2010. Somebody on Fox or at Breitbart or one of those right-wing the turd factories put out a story saying that the sissy panty-waist liberals won't let them have fireworks at Mount Rushmore because they're afraid it'll cause a goddamn fire, bunch of sissies. I guarantee it. If you go and you look, you'll find a story about Mount Rushmore not being able to have fireworks on the 4th of July because liberals. Now, who's the most likely to have fed that line of horse shit to him? Stephen Miller. Mm-hmm. Silent R. Lamar with a note says, yes, sir, we plant his face on Mount Rushmore. As long as his face is on the backside and at the bottom of the mountain, where his followers can hug and piss on his face as needed. Well, he certainly has shown that other portion of to America, hasn't he? We get a little closer every day. You know, I've still got my bed out there. We get a little closer every day to that moment when he begins tearing his clothes off in front of a live national audience, you know, a la Peter Boyle from Dream Team.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Yep. No, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but that's what happens in that scene, in that wonderful little delightful screwball madcap wacky zany comedy. And so Peter Boyle begins undressing in front of a congregation of people to whom he had begun testifying who had never seen him before in their lives. They were right there with him until the clothes started coming off. Well, in this case, the maggots will be right there with him, even though the clothes start coming off. Hell of a time we live in, isn't it? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it is. And this is just the, you know, this is just the Donald Trump part of this Titanic Tuesday. It's still Pride Month, and will be for another 5 days. And so the Trump administration is using Pride Month to make sure and tell the world just exactly what they think of the LGBTQ community. I'm reminded of the sign over in Beckley a couple of Saturdays back that said, "Let God burn them quickly." But they've appointed anti-LGBTQ bigots and homophobes to the federal bench. And now comes Paul Watkins. He heads the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau Office of Innovation. And he was put there by Mick Mulvaney in order to try to do as much harm to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as humanly possible. Well, it turns out, thanks to a group called Allied Progress and some digging around that they have done, that Paul Watkins has done a pretty decent job of hiding his proclivities. The organization says Watkins' conservative credentials go back to his undergraduate years at Hillsdale College, consistently ranked by the Princeton Review as one of the least LGBT-friendly schools in the country. In law school, Watkins participated in the Blackstone Legal Fellowship, a program run by Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a tax-exempt legal dodge for religious bigots, which he later worked for as an attorney. The Alliance Defending Freedom, yes, is an anti-LGBT hate group. Paul Watkins, curiously, left the Alliance Defending Freedom off of his LinkedIn profile. But he was working for them out in Arizona when they were trying to codify discrimination against LGBT individuals in Arizona and ban same-sex marriage there. Then he found his way into the Arizona Attorney General's office, which was apparently awash in alums of the Alliance Defending Freedom hate gang. His new boss, the Attorney General there, filed an amicus brief in the cake shop case. And at present, he's working to make sure that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau exempts businesses from consumer protection regulations that include crucial anti-discrimination laws like the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, regardless of the fact that there's bipartisan support for that regulation. Jesus. They are everywhere. And you know what the Republicans will do? Absolutely nothing. Just like what happened when people tried to, people, by people I mean journalists, tried to get some Republican senators on the record about the allegations by E. Jean Carroll. According to Manu Raju at CNN, when Kevin McCarthy was asked about it, he said, House Minority Leader, he's the highest-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives. Kevin McCarthy said, I haven't read that. I know the president has said it's not true. I haven't know anything else about it. I read that as it is written. I haven't read that. I know the president has said this is not true. I haven't know anything else about it. Go away. Please go away. Stop asking me about this. I mean, I've got to have the maggots on my side if I want to keep my cushy job. I mean, we're talking about pay raises for members of Congress and shit like that, and I'd hate to miss out on that. Her emails, what? Look over there. Manu Raju also reported that Kevin McCarthy had been asked about the whole business about Trump said he couldn't have raped her because she's not his type. I haven't seen that. You know what? This is a perfect example of the moral bankruptcy of the Republican Party. It is not at all controversial, except to maggots, to say the president's statements were repulsive, and I wish he would stop making them. I mean, that's not even particularly harsh on it, but the next thing you know, all he's got to do is send out a tweet, and all of a sudden, all of his little maggots in your little home district are ready to barbecue your ass in molasses. Kristen Wilson Kepler, also from CNN, saw Ivanka Trump today at a Senate Republican lunch, and she asked her about the new allegation, and Ivanka, well, she was silent as a graven image. So Kristen Wilson Kepler followed up by asking, should women be believed? Ivanka, again with the graven image. Igor Bobic from Huffington Post was there. And he asked Cindy Hyde Smith, you remember Cindy Hyde Smith from Mississippi, Stan? The woman who said that she would like to be seated on the first row of a lynching. She has developed a policy of not giving interviews to members of the press in the hallways of the Senate. Lamar Alexander, however, said to Igor Bobic, I don't have anything to say about that. Asking Senate number two, and I do mean number two, John Cornyn. John Cornyn responded, I don't have any comment. Fom Tillis of North Carolina declared, I take the president's statement at face value. The hell's that mean, Fom? You take it at face value that there is a type of woman that Donald Trump rapes? One of those 16 or 23 or 24 is his type? Is that it? Then there's James Lankford of Oklahoma, Stan, who said, I don't even want to get into believable or not believable. I know she's selling a book. I'm so old, I remember when the Republican Party billed themselves as the party of family values. Precious Lindsey Graham said, the president's firmly denied it. Yes, but because Lindsey is owned by the goddess of irony, she caused him to use the adverb firmly. The president's firmly denied it. That's the end of it for me, unless she shows something new. What do you want to see, Lindsey? Pat Toomey played it more ignorant than most, simply replying to Igor Bobik's question, I haven't seen that. Because Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania lives in a cave under a subterranean lake in another cave that's sealed off by a rock and cannot be reached by any sort of modern mass communications. Then there is that tower of moral clarity, Bishop Willard Romney, who was also asked by Igor Bobik about E. Jean Carroll's rape allegation. And he responded to Igor Bobik, this is a very serious nature, and it deserves to be considered and evaluated. Then Igor Bobik asked about the not my type question or comment, and Bishop Willard replied, the president indicated that this did not occur, and that's, I think, his strongest point to make. Holy be Jesus. And now we come to noted moderate Republican senator from Maine, Susan Collins. The closest thing to a critique of Trump's remarks comes from Susan Collins, who said, I thought that was extremely bizarre. None of them, of course, offered any sort of criticism for the fact that in the wake of the allegation, Donald Trump threatened her.
People should pay dearly for such false accusations.
Pay dearly. Wonder what that means to, say, a 3%er or an Oath Keeper or Proud Boy or any of the other fascist and neo-Nazi and white supremacist organizations that pledge their undying, highly armed loyalty to Donald J. Trump. I wonder what
she should pay dearly for such false accusations means to them.
Every time he says something like that, I recognize that we've added another person or group of people to those whose lives are daily put at hazard in this country from the hyper-violent members of Team Maggot. But that's your family values Republican Party there. You betcha. Of course, it was only, 25 years ago.
A long time ago.
That Republicans were shrieking bloody murder. About a stained blue dress. And a consensual act of oral sex. I have to admit, though, that I like little acts of resistance. I don't know if you're following the Women's World Cup. But Megan Rapinoe, one of the stars of the team, was asked by 8x8 magazine if she would go to the White House if the women's U.S. women's team manages to win the World Cup. She said, I'm not going to the fucking White House. Then she added, we're not going to be invited. She has earned, of course, Julius Caesar's ire because she won't sing the Star Spangled Banner and she won't put her hand over her heart. And she's been known at least on one occasion to kneel during the anthem in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick. I'm not going to the fucking White House. We won't be invited. I think she's probably correct in that assessment. Because after all, she's not his type. Right? Yeah. Steve in New York says, I'm heartbroken the more I hear this stuff about Trump et al. My mom and uncle and I grew up with our Trumpensies. I've told my uncle I'll never speak to him until he apologizes to me for his vote. I have a feeling you got a long wait coming, Steve. I'm sorry to say it. But the problem with all of this is that the worse he becomes, the deeper the corner into which the maggots are forced. And they have no way out. You know, the collaborators in France post-Second World War had a way out. The ones that didn't get hanged had their heads shaved and were marched through the middle of town. And then they were welcomed back into French society. note coming from Bill in PA. Subject line, Pat Toomey. You're right, we have no idea where Pat lives. The only way we can contact him is through his Senate site. Well, if you wanted to know where he lived, he'd put you on the Christmas card list. Dave from Talibandiana. The man who carved Mount Rushmore was a racist. Borglin wrote a letter to D.C. Stevenson congratulating him on a speech that he, Stevenson, had. And forgive me for not remembering the subject of the speech, but I have a feeling it had to do with how the dark-skinned folk were taking over and all that other horse shit and the real Americans bullshit. And by the way, Teddy Roosevelt was put on there because of his advocacy for conservation of nature in the national park system. Well, okay, that explains it. I mean, and he loved the Black Hills of South Dakota. Signed, your buddy Dave, reporting from the blind in Talibandiana, in rolling my eyes at the stupidity of the orange idiot. Well, thank you, Kyle. Kyle says, I love your impressions, especially your Lindsey Graham and him using firmly and see more in the context of the so-called present president raping a woman. Just caused me to spit my coffee on my shirt. Much needed unintentional humor. So thanks to Lindsey for that quote, I guess. That's my whole world, Kyle. My whole world is I guess. And Darlene in Connecticut says, that's just the thing, Bob. How do we call out crappy-ass so-called favorite modifier of conservatives everywhere, journalism, like what you just riffed on about the Hill. Like the stupid journalist that asked Nancy Pelosi why she was essentially causing trouble, and I'm paraphrasing, about wanting to see Trump in prison, and that should she modify her language as if she's the problem and not Trump. How infuriating to give Trump a pass and consistently normalize him, Nancy laid into the journalist, and rightfully so. Are we so afraid of Trump's fake news claims that we're putting the Fourth Estate, questioning that designation as well, on such a pedestal as to not call journalists out when they're being utterly stupid and dysfunctional? Why are we not demanding more of journalists, particularly as they are falling down miserably on the job, at least in terms of the for-profit media? And, you know, I think it's a natural reaction. We see everybody attacked by all members of the media attacked by Trump, you know, the treason comments, the enemy of the people comments. And they are inherently repulsive to us. So maybe we pull back a little bit from criticizing them when they deserve to be criticized. Like when the New York Times decides to just ho-hum, yawn, ignore a credible allegation of rape against the sitting president of the United States. And as was admirably pointed out over at Think Progress, the business of the New York Times ignoring the E. Jean Carroll story becomes worse when you take it in the context of its overall disastrous coverage that's gone on for years. Ian Millhiser's piece at Think Progress discusses the E. Jean Carroll apology from the editor of the Times, Dean Baquet. I don't know what you did with that Q-U. Clueless. We don't go to cocktail parties together, Dean and me, so, you know, I don't know. He probably couldn't pronounce Kincaid either. And it's bad enough when you take the E. Jean Carroll story and analyze it in the context of just the Times' behavior with regard to Hillary Clinton. It becomes manifestly more so if you take it back in time to the stenography that the New York Times did for the W administration when the W administration was hell-bent on attacking a bunch of people who had never lifted a finger against us, namely Iraq. Then it becomes clear that there's a case of journalistic and moral and ethical bankruptcy at the New York Times that probably would wipe out the treasuries of several decent-sized countries. Ian Millhiser writing, there are many reasons why these informal guidelines led the Times to make bad decisions on this particular story, but since Baquet acknowledges that the Times was overcautious here, it's worth noting what happened several years ago when the Times abandoned all caution in its coverage of one particular story. New emails jolt Clinton campaign in race's last days. And Mr. Millhiser references the Columbia Journalism Review of December 2017, wherein they discovered that the Times published 13,481 articles in the 69 days leading up to the 2016 election. They paid special attention to any story that appeared on the printed newspaper's front page. They classified and categorized stories by policy story, personal scandal story, or campaign miscellaneous. And in that Columbia Journalism Review, not affiliated with CBS, they discovered that in just 6 days, and this is a quote from the piece, In just 6 days, the New York Times ran as many cover stories about Hillary Clinton's emails as they did about all policy issues combined in the 69 days running up to the election. Lot to apologize for there. And then, as David in South Carolina Stan points out, how about all the journalists who threw Jethreen Bodine a going away party? Yeah, I read about that too. Sickening, to say the least. A going away party. How perfectly interesting. If an interesting liar can't have an interesting going away party, well, I don't know just what this world's coming to. Bobby Pins, please. But yeah, that happened. Guess what? It shouldn't be necessary to explain this, but if you're a member of the for-profit media, and if you're part of the vaunted Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps, you got no business at all throwing any kind of a bash for a woman who was straight-up busted in the Mueller report for repeatedly, serially lying to the American people. Who was busted for just flat out making stuff up. April Ryan said she wouldn't be going. She posted a video just blistering Jethreen Bodine, Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags, and ended it with the eponymous phrase, "Bye, girl." But if you want to lay this at someone's feet, it was Anita Kumar of Politico and Francesca Chambers of the Daily Mail who threw the going-away party. 50 people showed up at Rare Steakhouse, but damn few wanted to admit that they were there. One reporter told the New York Times, "You'd better not say I was here." Another said, "Me either." And even John Roberts over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda responded, "I need to clear any comments with my media relations team." One reporter said it wasn't a party. Asked by the Columbia Journalism Review, not affiliated with CBS, that reporter said, "It's not a party." An unnamed White House correspondent told Columbia Journalism Review, "Everybody has their issue with Sarah Sanders, but if you can't have a drink with somebody, then all of civilization is broken down." Holy fuck me dead. And so, layers upon layers, we got another question to ask of the Columbia Journalism Review, and again, the New York Times. What journalistic purpose is served by providing these people with anonymity? Because I got nothing. I mean, John Roberts goes on the record because, well, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Better not say I was here. Yeah, me neither. It's free booze. We're journalists. What do you want? What do you want to bet it wasn't free booze? I don't know. Cash bar will draw, that phrase will draw a lot of people in Washington, D.C. Today in history, a great day in history, Ron and Raleigh reminding us, June 25th, 1876, the Battle of Greasy Grass, better known to pale faces as the Battle of the Little Bighorn, when Sitting Bull and his warriors kicked the ass of the arrogant racist prick George Armstrong Custer. His sculpture in the Black Hills is still incomplete. Crazy Horse. Yeah, that's the sculpture that's still incomplete, I think. It's a beautiful piece of work. Prettier than Mount Rushmore. Long way to go. Yeah, George Armstrong Custer graduated at the bottom of his class at West Point. I mean, he was no Mike Pompeo. And he proved why in that particular instance. I guess he'd been a noted cavalry officer, or a cavalry officer of some note, during the Civil War. But then he got sent out west, as did many Union officers, to participate in the ongoing genocide of the native peoples, particularly of the Great Plains. And he had proven himself adept at slaughtering women and children, but not so much when it came to well-armed Native American warriors. Looking for something real quick here. I bet Ron and Raleigh knows what it is. There it is. Popped right up. Little Big Man, one of my favorite films. Dustin Hoffman. And in this case, who played Custer? Went on to play on Soap. Had president and Custer in Little Big Man has presidential ambitions and more than an overweening case of raving paranoia.
Damage to.
Wait, where's that coming from?
Eight.
All right, that's a pain in the ass.
Your computer has alert.
Okay. That crap makes me crazy. Goodbye.
The tool.
Nope. Let's see if that cured it. Yeah, it did. So, yeah. Custer, who divided his forces, rule one, don't divide your forces, and two, got slaughtered.
What's your answer, Muleskin? General? You go down there.
You're advising me to go into the coulee?
Yes, sir.
There are no Indians there, I suppose.
I didn't say that. There are thousands of Indians down there. And when they get done with you, there won't be nothing left but a greasy spot. This ain't the Washita River, General. And them ain't helpless women and children waiting for you. The Cheyenne brave and Sioux. You go down there if you got the nerve.
Still trying to outsmart me, aren't you, Mule Skinner? You want me to think that you don't want me to go down there, but the subtle truth is you really don't want me to go down there. Well, are you reassured now, Major?
Interesting to note that this film gets made during the Vietnam era, when the common understanding of our general officer class was that they were not the sharpest knives in the drawer. But, yeah. You go down there. You go down there, General. And so we are at the halfway point of the program for this Titanic Tuesday. And damn, haven't we covered some ground. Oh, let's get a little more email, too. News Ninja Gene, across the pond. Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan? My sister went there. Fortunately, she didn't vote Trump. I suppose there is a quantum of mercy left in the universe, Gene. As to the Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags Jethreen Bodine going away party, Ron in Raleigh says, well, hell, heavy hors d'oeuvres and an open bar journalist ain't going to pass that shit up. Yeah, I mean, even on the White House on a White House press corps salary, free eats is free eats. Yeah, I did that. We talked about that yesterday, Flavio. The incident in which on Twitter, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dog-walked Steve King and Liz Cheney at one and the same time. So, hey, you want to engage in some conversation? Stress lines open. 844-843-4676. The other line's open, too. 304-574-8481. 8184. It's so seldom. Okay, let's find 304. Okay, that's... You know, I don't even. I'll have to check in the chat room. I need to write these things down. Oh well. Anyway, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. One way or the other, you can get into the program if you want. But I'm going to check in with Brad and Desi to see what's going on in the wonderful world of. Green news today. Yes, let's do that.
It's Tuesday, June 25, 2019.
Do you think it's a threat? Man-made climate emergency is a threat.
I think the answer to that is going to be based upon the science.
Well, the science says yes.
Vice President Mike Pence refuses to acknowledge his own administration, says climate change is a threat to national security.
Every well is drying up, every reservoir, and now the death toll is at 126 because of the heat.
Millions suffering from water shortages and heat waves in India. Trump USDA burying studies on the impacts of climate change on U.S. agriculture, plus General Electric scraps natural gas power plant 20 years early.
Why?
You'll find out.
All of those mysteries and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, the truth of the matter is with the advent of natural gas, with the natural gas explosion that's developing, with clean coal technology, we're seeing a significant reduction in carbon emissions all across this country.
A, no, we're not. And B, with the natural gas explosion that's developing... Really, Mike Pence? Those are the best words you got. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, you're really going to make me wait 6 minutes to hear why General Electric is closing down that nat gas plant?
Yes, I am.
Damn it.
But first, as we go to air, the first 2020 Democratic presidential primary debates are about to launch in Miami, Florida, and we'll be watching to see if climate change is a big topic. And it better be, since the Democratic National Committee refused to hold a debate specifically focused on climate change. And as if right on cue, on Monday, Miami broke a new daily heat record and a large wildfire erupted in the Florida Everglades, which officials say will continue to burn amid the scorching heat until some rain arrives.
Oh, well, that's great. Good thing the Democrats are not having a debate on our climate emergency. Why would they possibly want to do that?
In India, the city of Chennai, home to nearly 6 million people, has become the first major Indian city to face acute water shortages. Water levels in all of the city's reservoirs have fallen to their lowest levels in 70 years due to weak monsoon rains, a prolonged severe heat wave, and lack of water infrastructure. Scientists say India has seen a drop in overall average rainfall since 1970, and its groundwater is being rapidly depleted. Without improved water management, 21 Indian cities are projected to run out of groundwater within the next few years, and 40% of India could run out of groundwater by 2030.
Well, that's not going to cause a problem at all for the entire world.
Europe is grappling with an extended extreme heat wave, predicted to be so severe that officials are taking emergency measures to protect vulnerable populations like the elderly and the poor, particularly in old world cities where few buildings have air conditioning.
What climate change?
The annual Arctic spring thaw has begun with a vengeance. Arctic scientists say soaring temperatures 40 degrees above normal have triggered the earliest melt of the surface of the Greenland ice sheet ever recorded in the month of June. Arctic sea ice has also reached a record early low for the month of June. But here in the U.S., Politico reports that the Trump Department of Agriculture is burying dozens of federally funded scientific studies that inform American farmers about the effects of man-made climate change, which is already altering the U.S. agriculture economy and our ability to grow staple food crops.
Well, it's best they keep that stuff a secret.
The U.S. just experienced its wettest 12 months on record, and farmers in the Midwest are struggling to get their corn and soy crops in the ground on time. Pretending climate change doesn't exist does not make it go away.
Says you.
But Trump's Vice President Mike Pence, in an interview with CNN's Jake Tapper, refused to even say if he agrees with U.S. scientists and the U.S. military that climate change is a threat to national security. And instead, he lied about the impacts of rolling back pollution regulations.
So you don't think it's a threat, is all I'm saying. You don't think it's a threat.
I think we're making great progress reducing carbon emissions. America has the cleanest air and water in the world. We'll continue to use market forces.
We don't have the cleanest air and water in the world. You get back to me with some statistics.
But we're making progress on reducing carbon emissions.
I love the fact that Jake Tapper is just openly laughing at the vice president.
Yeah, and of course, what Pence said is just not true. Since the start of the Trump administration, both U.S. carbon emissions and toxic air pollution are on the rise. And finally...
Is this that GE story?
Yes, it is.
Finally.
General Electric has announced it will close and demolish a 10-year-old natural gas-fired power plant in California that still has 20 years remaining in its useful life because the plant is, quote, uneconomical due to market competition from cheaper, cleaner solar and wind energy.
Really?
Really.
Perhaps GE ought to talk to Vice President Mike Pence about that developing natural gas explosion he was referencing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey, hey, I'm gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
Well, that'll probably be sufficient to screw up the YouTube file, but what the heck? It was well done. Here we are on the way to the third hour of the program. A couple of notes coming in, one from Lady B regarding Susan Collins. earlier, you were talking about Susan Collins and her almost psychotic support of damaged men. People have heard about self-hating blacks. And, of course, the self-hating Jew is a part of the lexicon of every Republican in America. But there are also self-hating women, says Lady B. The type of women who would stand by their men, even if the press showed pictures of his mistress and their new baby. It's one thing to stay married for power, i.e. Hillary. It's another when you know that man is the best you're ever going to get. Susan Collins is a self-hating woman. She's been told the men are always right, and she will stand behind that belief until death will she part with it. Women like her should never be allowed in positions of power. She will always side with the men, even while pretending to deny it. But whatever, she will be derided in history for what she is, an old and bitter woman who hates it that her female friends had more fun than her. Probably up to and including Hillary had more fun than Susan Collins. But so based on the standard that Lady B enunciates, Cindy Hyde-Smith comes to mind, shouldn't be in the Senate because all she's going to do is toady along behind the boys in the hope that they'll act like they like her. Joni Hog D. Baller Ernst, who, having proved herself absolutely nothing, never mind the bread bags on the shoes and whatnot, she just does what she's told. I don't know if Liz Cheney is a self-hating woman. I think she just hates everyone and everything. I think she's a life-hating human. But again, probably should not have been let anywhere near the levers of power, but money is a miraculous thing. Thank you, Lady B. And from Darlene in Connecticut, E. Jean Carroll's claims are credible, but she is a total ditz from my perspective as a privileged white woman like her. You were being diplomatic, Bob, last night about her reason for not bringing a claim against Trump for what he did. But I was downright scratching my head. Her reasoning makes no sense whatsoever. I think she's full of shit that she's over it, fine, and has moved on. If that were really the case, then she wouldn't have bothered to bring it up at this point in time. There is something going on with her, something she's wrestling with that she hasn't come to terms with, or is unaware of, or is not ready to face, and I feel complete empathy for her. She doesn't want to deal with going after Trump and potentially facing him. I don't fault her with that. But at least be honest about it and don't sit there and say that doing so would somehow be disrespectful to all the other women that he's raped or sexually assaulted. That makes no sense whatsoever. It is total bullshit. And Trump gets away with rape again. There are so many of them. So many of them that he's gotten away with it. Including the little girl whom he raped because she reminded him of Ivanka. That seems to be his gold standard, reminding you're in danger if you remind Donald Trump of Ivanka.
You were great. You remind me of Ivanka.
We get two of those. Professional sex workers. And, yep, ho-hum. At least that was consensual, I guess. Right? So let's run over and check in with our buddy Todd, see what's going on. Hey, Todd.
This is Bob.
This is Bob. Is that Todd?
It could be. Oh, all right. Well, you know, I'm glad that Lady B emailed you, because I keep forgetting to compliment her on her prose and her comments. Her emails are just really, really wonderful.
Oh, I completely agree. I get stuff that makes me think long and hard about what she's brought up and things that I've said too.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's a discourse that, you know.
Well, it's also the lost art of correspondence.
That's true. You know, young folks don't believe in sending letters or cards or anything anymore.
Well, I mean, why would you? You got email. Nobody. Hell, the kid. Yeah, the youngins don't even use email no more. Because that's too
Snapchat.
Slow. Yeah, we just Snapchat each other.
Mm-hmm.
And since we've run off down the geezer trail, there's this. You know, if I need to call somebody, I pick up the phone, I dial their number, I talk to them, I hang up, I'm done. I am almost never motivated to use FaceTime or any of those other video chat utilities.
I get cursed out for not doing that. I'm supposed to be doing that on a regular basis, and it's just. The concept is great, but, you know.
Well, I guess if you've got unlimited data on your dialing plan, it's okay. But, you know, FaceTime and those others burn through some shitloads of data in a damn hurry. And that stuff does cost money.
I'm so glad you brought that up, interestingly. I'm scared to change my plan because I have unlimited data, but and some folks, they advertise it, but, you know, when are they going to change? I don't trust these corporations.
Well, but how unlimited is it? I mean, I've got it, too, and it's unlimited up to 22 gigs, and after that, they throttle your ass. And then what I found out when I got to D.C. is, you know, having had the problems that I had on the road the previous week, I decided to make sure that didn't happen again, so I made sure I had unlimited data. So I fired it up, and no, I didn't. I had dial-up speed when I set up the phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot for the laptop that was sending out the stream. At dial-up speed.
Good kid.
So I call the fine folks at Verizon, and they say, well, no, of course, because you're not paying the extra $10 per phone that you have to pay if you want to be able to have real high-speed internet when you do a hotspot. Dummy. So that's another $20 a month on the bill. If I want to be able to. And, you know, with things like Netroots Nation coming up, I have to have it on there. Because
right.
you never know when it's going to collapse like a, when the internet's going to collapse like a house of cards in a big convention situation like that.
Right, exactly. You really need it then. That's when you need it. Well, that's tough. But you, okay. You know, Verizon, though, honest to God, that's the only signal in the city, well, in the cities that I've traveled in, where you can be on the phone in the subway. Years ago, I got rid of, now that we're talking about this, years ago, I got rid of, who was it? The one that folded over, T-Mobile. They would drop a call in the middle of downtown. The middle of downtown.
Oh yeah, and I mean, I've seen the limits. Of course, maybe it's better now, but I remember pulling into Washington D.C. on the night of January the 20th, 2009, and trying to make a cell phone call. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was that was Barack Obama's first inauguration night, and I'm surprised that the towers didn't just melt into heaps of slag from from the amount of overloaded work they were getting.
For sure, but
your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please try again later.
Now they threaten me every month because I always go quote unquote. You know, they let me know like, well. You breached, because I've run about between 16 and 17 gigs a month, because they send me these nasty text messages. I'm just a data hog. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And they say, well, if you're in a congested area, you may not even get service. So this is what happens. So they're serious then. So because, like you said, like it's different when you got closer to a more metro, larger SMSA. They start, you know, that's when you really see it. That's what you're saying, right?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Right. So, is it worth it or is it not? Like, I don't know if I should switch or not. you know, because I'm with AT&T and I've been with them for a very long time.
Well, I mean, that's why we've got what we've got here with Frontier. As crummy as it is, you know, 10 down and one to maybe 1.5 up, it ain't metered.
Mm-hmm.
And metered internet is the future.
Mm-hmm.
Not because there's so little internets out there, but because it's like long distance was for in the old phone system. It didn't cost them any extra. It was just a way to squeeze the rubes.
Wow. The young kids will not understand it. Like long distance. I mean, the world would stop. The world. Long distance call. Oh, hell. Blah, blah, blah. You know, everything just stops. That means nothing now. I guess I'm a geezer, you know. So that's a big deal.
But the thing was, there's no difference between that and metered data insofar as there's no actual cost associated.
No, well, that's the whole scam. Like, if I had known that, in other words, when they were selling bandwidth, it was like a minimum $10,000 investment. Probably it was for burner phones, you know, the pay-as-you-go. But even still, to get in on the ground floor bandwidth, because there's really no infrastructure involved. You build a couple of towers every now and then. I mean, it's not like there's pipes of running water.
And you sit back and you turn on the printing press and let the money roll off.
Well, right. My God, that.
And it's frustrating as hell for me because down by the road, where the Frontier Internet goes by, that's fiber. Mm-hmm. That's fiber. One piece.
They won't bring it out to your place.
One piece of equipment that the techs refer to as a pizza box, and about a 35-foot run of fiber, and I'm doing 30 down and 10 up.
Shoot.
They won't do it.
They won't work with you?
Nope. They will not do it.
What is their reasoning?
Well, the reason that fiber's there, sir, is because other customers have paid a lot of money to have that fiber, and, well, you didn't.
But...
Which is, of course, not even remotely
true. Wait a minute. We all fucking pay. God damn it. Because I'm going to tell you, AT&T cheats. That they've gotten sued for cheating. They're just like Wells Fargo. They get sued, they pay a fine, and they go right back to that behavior. They go right back to that behavior. Look at your bill. They will pad that goddamn bill. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten like credits and this and that. It's like, oh, we don't know. I'm like, what the fuck? How do you not know? You know, that's like me just walking in AT&T and grabbing a couple laptops and saying, oh, they don't want those. Fuck that. They steal, man. They're fucking thieves.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, that's the truth, though, man. That's bullshit. And we're talking about ethereal, you know, there's really nothing to it. It's not like labor-intensive. You built the infrastructure, now you want to...
Oh, no. My I've got a great relationship with the techs. They come out here all the time because the shit collapses. So, you know, meet them with a cup of coffee, a couple of scones. Hey, guys, how you doing? They're union guys. They're cool. And right. and they said, no, it's not even, it wouldn't even be a day's labor for us to get fiber to you.
See? Nope.
But if you turn around, if you reach out to the Public Service Commission, now that we've got a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, amosexual Republican government here, you find out that internet is not covered by the Public Service Commission, and they get to pretty much do anything they want.
Is that a state thing?
Yeah, because they're not a utility. Utility.
Which is bullshit. See, you are JD, and I'm telling you, you could blow a hole through that argument.
Not with this Public Service Commission. This is a Public Service Commission that bows and scrapes to the coal industry, the gas industry. No, some little schmuck like me, not a prayer.
Well, look, my point is that's a bullshit argument. That argument does not carry any weight, because look how many forms the government, there are forms that you absolutely, there's things you can absolutely not do without internet now.
Yeah.
You just can't. I mean, they scale, people have scaled people, entities, government agencies, everything. It's like, well, go online, you know, and print it out. They don't have any paper forms anymore. And I mean, I don't blame them, but I mean, everyone just doesn't have internet. But it is a utility. I mean, when you're looking for a position, you can't even you have to, if you don't submit it through the internet, they're gonna think you're a fucking weirdo.
Well, there are places you cannot apply for a job except on the internet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, well, that's actually one of the hoops you have to cross. Can you navigate? You know, can you use an electronic form? See, I'm not a lawyer, but I could blow the hole through that case. That's ridiculous. That's bullshit. But like you said, you know, public utility and where you are, that just means we do what, the corporations tell us to do. Because, you know, we have to poison people. That's our job. That's fucked up, man. And you can't say, like, look, I need this. Like, eventually, you know, things change. Demographic patterns change. They might need to run it out there anyway.
Yeah, and it's not like I'm not paying a king's ransom for this crappy service anyway. Because what I'm getting with the 10 down and 1 to 1.5 up, that's actually bonded service. That's two lines bonded together to get me that much.
Wow. Oh, so you're maxing out on what's offered.
Oh, yeah.
As it is. Well, that's Frontier, man. They have the nerve to whenever I see that commercial, I laugh. I'm like, oh, Frontier. They have the nerve to advertise. That's too much. But Lady B, wow, man. I've been listening, and she just, it seems like her submissions get better and better.
Oh. If you take all this seriously, despite my clowning around, there's serious stuff to think about here. And that's the beauty of the whole community, is that we're actually thinking about things. I mean, I don't want to just sit here and say things and have a yep, because then you're just right-wing radio. It's the interchange. It's the exchange of ideas. It's the development of thoughts. It's the collegiality that makes this as special as I think it is.
Oh, it's special. Let me tell you how special it is. Tracy may even eat mayonnaise this weekend coming up.
Oh, quit it! No, don't do that to her. Tracy's kicking ass on the new program.
Oh, I know. How about that?
Proud of her.
We were talking about that. Oh, that I am. Yeah, we had a few nice talks actually. Yeah, we've been talking. She's been on fire. She's been on fire. I'm only joking with Tracy. But I'm moving on from that for a second. But man, Lady B is right about Susan Collins, and you're right. It she got slighted, and it's just, you know, she needs to work out her issues before she has that much power. She's always getting in the way with the bullshit. But I don't know. The water might be too cold. It's just dragging things down. So did you engage in your filthy habit?
This morning, some, yes, not a great deal. What did I miss?
Well, they were really honing in on the concentration camps at the border with these children. And, you know, we talked about this when it first started, because it was just like, what are you doing? But, you know, the more I think about it, there's a lot to this. This is really deep. There's so many facets to this shit, and none of them are good. But I was happy to hear folks talk about, you know, who's profiteering off of this. That's important.
Oh, somebody's making a cool fortune off of this. And they've got a budget for things like diapers and toothpaste and toothbrushes.
Exactly.
And the only reason they're in court is because, you know, if... Look, it's the same, God damn it, it's the same model as they use in the for-profit prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
If you give the prisoners real craft American singles, well, then that's money that the CEO and the executive class can't have. So necessarily then, you go to that prison cheese that's made entirely out of vegetable oil and artificial flavoring and a little bit of artificial orange color.
First of all, there is so much wrong with privatized prisons. And people,
you don't use good bologna. You use that nasty,
no,
low-rent, half soy, half turkey bologna. And you take the cost savings there because you got some chief financial officer who's worked it out, yep, down to the 97th goddamn decimal point, who says, you know, this can turn into real millions if we use the shitty ass half soy half turkey bologna instead of the good Con's beef bologna. And they're not supposed to like it in here anyway.
This is, God, man, so you got me started on this. I really hadn't planned. I mean, I wanted to talk about these kids, but we have to address this issue really quickly. For instance, a guy named Reverend Pinckney, okay, and he's the one who blew the cover off of poison water in Bar Harbor in Michigan or Wisconsin. Anyway, it's upper Midwest. I can't remember if it's Michigan or Wisconsin. But, and he, you know, he set the stage for what is going to happen with water. Remember, you can control water and food. You can control a population. So, and then Flint was a test case. And they sent, he got railroaded, they sent him to prison, and he was eating maggoty food. You know, he would call people, and you could hear his recordings, and he would, like, people would take pictures because he had support. You know, if he wasn't a high-profile person, we wouldn't know this. But, right, so this is why you cannot, in America right now, you cannot have privatized prisons, because that means they're in it to make money, period.
Well,
it's
a violation of the concept of a penal system anyway, because there are constitutional issues at work in taking away someone's liberty. When you take away someone's liberty, you render that person a civil incompetent for purposes of the law.
Right.
So that person can't sue, can't be sued. They are in the complete care, custody, and control of the Department of Corrections or whatever it is. When you outsource that shit to a third party corporation, they have less in the way of constitutional proscriptions on their behavior, and so it, there's an argument to be made that it's unconstitutional from jump.
Right.
Because you can't take someone's liberty away and transfer the custody of that liberty over to an unaccountable for-profit prison corporation. Hey, Todd,
how is that not obvious?
I know.
The state is responsible for meting out a sentence, so the state is responsible for your custody and your well-being.
Well, because in many instances, in particular in the South, the prison system was not developed as a means of rehabilitation, or it was developed as a means of extending slavery. Angola, Louisiana, comes immediately to mind. Parchman in Mississippi. Hey, I just got a message from Agnes. Can you stand by for a minute? I got to run out. I'll be right back. Might be a couple of minutes of dead air, but would you stand by, please, Todd?
I will.
Stand by. Sorry about that, Todd. When I'm on air, I'm in charge of all strangers showing up at the door.
Of course.
That kind of shit happens around here. Hey, do you know where so-and-so's house is? And it says it. And the Google Maps ain't helping. Google Maps is no good around here. So, yeah.
All right, so why is someone showing up at your door at dusk?
Because it's Appalachia, and that happens. But it's always a little weird.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No. You don't want your wife answering the door. No.
So
it's getting dark here, so I know it's getting dark there. My God.
Yeah, it's still pretty daylighty here. But, you know, so I pop out the studio door and walk around front. Can I help you there, stranger?
Surprise!
Can I help you there, stranger? And don't flinch.
Because you people have, like, guns everywhere.
You people, yes, yes. You just you peopled me.
I'm just saying. Come on, man. We're friends. We're so past that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just like, what the? I mean, are you broke? I mean, if you're broken down, it's one thing. If you say, well, my vehicle's broken, I mean, I get that.
Oh, no, we've had that at, you know, like 2 and 3 in the morning, and that was not a good scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had people show up at the door who've been, like, dumped out of the car by whoever they were riding with, and they weren't exactly in a good frame of mind or anything vaguely resembling sober or, you know, untwisted.
The opioid type of dump off or whatever.
Meth, crack.
That meth is nasty. So
One of those happened one time when I was on the road and Agnes dealt with it herself, and it was a hell of a story.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The crazy yeah. fucked up woman trying to get it, you know, come in, get through the door, and Agnes, you know, You may come in face first, but you will leave feet first.
Well, you know what's interesting? This has nothing to do with, I don't know. When I was growing up, I was taught you always call up someone's house before you come over. I learned that like around 6 or 7. Don't pop up. You might get your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant then, but, you know, now when you get older, it's like, oh, yeah, well. But they, you know, it's not, I don't know, man, around here, people just boom. Like, well, you know, I'm trying to be polite, but, you know, I'm doing things. What's up? What you doing?
Well, see, you're not from around there. Southerners just do shit. You know, they turn around in people's driveways and stuff.
No, I mean, it's a cultural thing. I mean, it's like, seriously, it's like, man, what, you know.
But that's largely a bygone America, because if I find myself needing to turn around in somebody's driveway now, I check the curtains to make sure that they're not parting and, you know, and that a firearm barrel isn't to be seen.
Yeah, like, what?
Because this is Trump America. We're going to stand our ground, our home's a castle.
Oh, my God. Now, all right, so now we're on this, and I'm going back to the prisons for one second. But, you know, a few weeks ago, so there was a shooting right in front of my house, right on the street.
No shit.
There's a one-way street in front.
In lovely, pastoral, serene South Carolina?
Man, there's more guns than toenails here. So, look, there's a one-way street in front of me. And it's a tiny street. If you speed on that street, there's something wrong. So I just happened to walk out. And I see a small vehicle coming straight ahead at a high rate of speed. I'm like, that's odd. This is a one-way street. They shouldn't be doing that. So then he makes a right and goes down the street, and then an occupant pops up out of the sunroof, and he has a weapon, a firearm in each hand, shooting up the block.
The fuck?
Oh, well, this street, listen, this street has a history. Yo, this street, this street's a little hot. This is a weird, I mean, it's integrated. Like, this is a weird neighborhood. This is a weird neighborhood. It's like, it's very strange. It's a weird neighborhood. But, yeah, man, this is 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I think I'd want a house made of brick. I mean, not to get all three little pigs on you or anything, but, you know, the house made of straw and the house made of sticks is going to have a hard time knocking down some, you know, 3,000 feet per second, 9mm lead.
That's what it was. And it was so close, they had the banana, I could see the banana clips, you know.
Now, don't say that. You're going to give some member of the NRA a big old sad. Goddamn liberals don't know a clip from a magazine. That's obviously a magazine. Right, it's not a clip. Goddamn it, don't talk about guns if you don't know about guns.
And then they're going to want to come knock on my
wait.
Door.
I don't get a cowbell for that.
Yes, you do. Where's the cowbell?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, because that's right up there.
Yeah.
Just give Donald Trump a chance.
Oh, don't start that shit. You're still saying that. God.
Don't start that shit.
You're still saying this. Man, I've watched the Journal. Listen to the 20th.
Well, no, because you got a mention last Friday night from Steve from Georgistan, because he said they are thoroughly off the chain on Washington Journal right now. Just wandering around the neighborhood barking, you know, off the chain.
They're off the chain. This is our country, man. I'm scared to go to the fucking supermarket. These motherfuckers are around us.
You know, America has changed for the worst when a peace loving man like Todd is afraid to go to his local Trader Joe's for a loaf of sourdough and a bottle of yuzu.
Man,
you know what bums me out every time I'm there? You know what bums me out? I never have a freezer, so I never get to try their ice cream treats, damn it, because I know they've got to be good.
Oh, you're missing out, man. And did you get any of their version of Reese Cups? They have this kind of semi-dark chocolate. Like I said, they should have studio apartments upstairs because. It's just, first of all, the vibe. Imagine what it's like here.
Well, I think that one in Arlington, that's in a building. There's offices and probably some apartments above it. Can you imagine just, I'm going downstairs to Trader Joe's. I'll be back in a little bit.
God. Wine and cheese. I mean, there's $3 chocolate.
You know, I didn't have the heart. I mean, I already know how good it is. But I was standing there thinking, you know, I'm going to test this. Anybody can taste anything. I'm going to buy a bunch of this stuff, but I'd kind of like to have a little hunk of this aged Havarti right now. But I didn't do it because that would have been bad faith.
They do it, Bob.
I know they do it, but it would have been bad faith on my part.
I'm like, you know what? They see me in there too much, and I'm like, I could ask, but one of the people I go with a lot, she will always do that, and they are more than happy. They don't, and you know, you could bring things, but you know, one time I had to bring a beer back because it just didn't. That particular beer, you could tell, it got thrown in there. It was old. They said, oh, fine. They just gave me a whole other six-pack. I'm like, oh, okay. But seriously, they are, and it's amazing. You don't wait in line. I don't know, their business model, like, everyone can do everything in there. In other words, you see people stocking, but they can run to the register.
I mean, the other day, when I went back for more sourdough. The checkout guy looks at me and goes, so is this your last stop for the day? I said, nah, I still gotta go buy gasoline. He said, which way are you going? I told him. He said, go to Liberty. They're 10 cents cheaper on a gallon every day of the week. There's a Liberty next to a Shell, and you'll see it, and it'll be 10 cents cheaper than what they got at the Shell. You know, how awesome is that?
Man.
Guy saved me. Guy saved me a couple of bucks.
See, I mean, people smile. I mean, like, It's not like walking around Walmart
where everybody looks like they've their inner soundtrack is the lament of the Volga boatman.
Oh my god, I hate when I have to go there. But you know what's awful now? Our Walmart, they have great vegetables. I had to go in there and get some paint. So I walked past where, you know, the superstore. I walked, I'm like, oh, shoot. Their spinach, their fresh spinach, is less than half the price of everyone else around here. I looked at it. It didn't look good. I was like, shit.
Mm.
But you see, if I had small children, this is how they get them. Come on.
Yeah, sure.
If I had small children, it's just a pain in the ass if you have small kids in the car seats and all that. You're a single mom or whatever, even if you're not. Even if we're, you know, whatever, together. It's a pain in the ass to go from store to store. You have to plan it out.
Get in, get out, get done, get home.
Get home, because then you have to cook. You know, then you got to do baths and all that. You know, come on. There's a lot to it.
Well, no, I remember when I first went into, I think it was Wild Oats, not Whole Paycheck. It was years ago. I was in Massachusetts. And I saw that $17 a pound organic, free-range, cruelty-free, grass-fed, organic hamburger. $17 for a one-pound package. And I'm thinking, and at the time, the kids were little, still all at home. And I'm like, no, I ain't buying none of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that would take, let's see, at minimum...
1 pound?
Yeah.
Everybody gets like a little mini burger.
Well, no, I mean I'm thinking hamburger helper, because back then, you know, house full of, and it takes 2 boxes of hamburger helper, so that's 2 pounds of ground beef. So that's a $40. That's a $40 skillet of hamburger helper right there.
Oh, you're killing me. You better eat it. Man, I couldn't. How can you eat? Oh, my stomach's crunching.
No, nope, sorry. Oh, sorry, it's cut up weenies and tomato soup again, kids.
You better lick that plate, young man.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the real trick is you thin out the tomato soup with a little bit of hot water, then you throw in the ramen. And then you cut up the weenies in it.
Damn, you went on 1929 on me.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you're living large and you're getting the ramen with the flavor boost packet, well.
God.
That shit can run.
Oh, my God. Yo, but
that shit can nor- that shit can run north of a buck a cup.
Man. So I don't know if you looked at their meat. I don't know how they're, you know.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did. And I checked it. You know, I think I can't help thinking that a lot of the Trader Joe's stuff, it's packaged Trader Joe's, but I think it's coming from a common warehouse with Aldi.
Oh, no, it is. I'm pretty sure.
And
you're
so,
right.
You know, we've got an Aldi over in Beckley, so when I'm out of sourdough, I'm going to take my happy ass over to Beckley to Aldi and see if they've got a similar round thing of sourdough. If so, I will have confirmed a theory.
I don't remember the bread and Aldi, but they're a different type. They're related. They are related.
Well, Aldi owns Trader Joe.
Mm-hmm. But they carry some. Now the Aldi, we're way off. But the Aldi, my God, they have this breakfast cereal, like if you like granola or that kind of thing. Oh, they have
like a muesli.
Breakfast. Yeah. Oh, shit. Boy, that.
I will say when I walked in, they had fresh peaches in. Them things were little baseballs. They weren't. I mean, if you bought a sack full of those peaches at Trader Joe's last week when I was there, they might be fit to eat by now.
Mm-hmm.
If you kept them in a brown paper bag, you know, the whole week and out of the refrigerator.
Well, you have to, you know, well, it's like anything else. You have to look at what they have, and they change stock. Another great thing is that they have a little stuffed animal giraffe, right? And when you bring the kids in, you know, that's the big thing. They look for the giraffe. I'm trying to be funny, but you know, and they stick it up.
Oh, and I brought back a pint of the curry chicken salad with the with cashews and raisins in it.
Oh, hell yeah. No, no, that's the teat in the road. You mean from the refrigerator, of course, in the fridge. Yeah. Oh. That's just like somebody made it. And the other thing,
the avocado tzatziki. You know, the tangy yogurt dip with the dill and everything.
I know what you're talking about.
They folded some avocado in it just to make it hip. Yeah.
See, can you imagine a motel, a nice, clean hotel, small boutique hotel, then a dispensary, then Trader Joe's?
Well, there you go.
All together.
Yeah. Nirvana. Bliss.
But they're poor. I know you want to go, and I have to go soon, too, probably. But listen, those pork chops, they have some serious pork chops at Trader Joe's, man.
Well,
yeah,
see, when I was down in Georgia, there's a little grocery chain there down called Ingles, Ingles.
Yeah, I've been to Ingles. I have an Ingles card.
Yeah, nice store.
They're in Tennessee, too. I was there in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. So I picked up, they have this great international food section. Mm-hmm. And I picked up like 4 quart bottles of that, because I had been talking with Tracy about it, the Mojo Criollo marinade with the bitter orange.
What is that?
It's bitter orange and grapefruit and herbs and oil.
Oh, that sounds great.
And,
yeah. It looks like Mojo.
And, yeah, that's exactly what it is, Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that J sounds like an H, you know, the Mojo Criollo, Creole Mojo.
Right.
But
oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah, and I mean, you get your Ziploc bag, you pour some in, you throw in a bunch of thick-cut pork chops, and you pour more in, and you zip it shut, and you throw it in the refrigerator and forget it's there for about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Then out it comes, and onto the grill it goes.
Before we hang up, you got to tell me about your growing areas. But oh man, it's
just to let you know that it's not limited to your South or my Appalachia. Got a note in from Jude in the far Northwest. Subject line: driveways. Uh-huh. I was out with 3 of my granddaughters, 2, 3.5, and 7 years old, when I made the wrong turn. Saw a driveway where I could turn around. Made my way in about 8 feet when suddenly appeared an angry old man, yelling at the top of his lungs, aggressively looking at us, "Get the hell off my property now! Who the hell do you think you are?" My grandbabies got scared, but I kept saying to them the man was sick and they're safe as we backed away. And yes, Trump signs were all over his property, which appeared run down. And every time we passed that street, the little one who'd been 3.5 years old would say, "That man is so mean, Nana." Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh. See, that segues into something else I wanted to talk about. Yes. I almost got killed coming. I was coming back from home, you know, from Philly down here. What is his home now? And I made a mistake of sleeping in the driveway of a field. Like when you pull off the highway and there's like a little, I don't know, you know, when you pull off these little roads and there's a gas station and there's nothing else but like farmer's fields and shit. And I just needed some sleep. I just could not drive anymore. And I pulled in, and I had the windows down. And I heard this.
Oh, that's the pump action of a shotgun.
Man, he pumped that shotgun. I turned the key. I had a big old car at that point. I was like, "Who's the?"
Yeah, ain't sleepy anymore.
No.
I'm awake.
I know that. Mm-mm. So, yeah, if you know, this is America, man. Trump, I mean, this is before Trump, but people feel about it in the South, man. They feel something about their property. This is in North Carolina. But the food in TJ's, man, it's just an experience. Plus, it's the people, man. And the people who work there, they love it. I always talk to people and, like, you know, because sometimes, like, they had the best miso paste, and they don't carry it anymore. I keep complaining. They're like, "Yeah, a lot of people keep saying that we should get it back." They had the great miso paste, and if I had known they were going to discontinue it, I would have purchased more.
Hey, you know, you've mentioned from time to time that really good bouillon paste that you get. You know, it's more expensive, but it comes in the jar and you just kind of scoop it out. It's so useful. You remember talking about that?
I couldn't live without it.
Yeah, so I found...
If you have...
I found out something equally awesome. My buddy Bo was telling me about it. He lives up in Massachusetts up there, you know, amongst all them civilized people, and they got all kinds of good stuff. He gets jars of lobster bouillon.
Oh, shit.
Never heard tell of it before, but I thought, whoa. And so for like, you know, for like working up the base of, well, you know, any seafood-based kind of, oh, yeah.
Scampi, anything like that, because that's your consomme. That's like instant consomme.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And I've certainly never seen it on the shelves down here, but he said, it's good. Oh, it's good.
Well, they ain't got nothing but lobsters. Yeah, I could see that. Man, those shells, you boil down those. Wow. I never thought about that. Well, I've never seen it. It sounds delicious.
No, that'd be the front end of some kick-ass bisque.
See, because we remember when it was nothing but the cube bouillon, which I can't even go back to that.
Those are just tiny salt licks.
Yeah, right. You know, my dear neighbors up the street, they like that. You know what I mean? I throw that in their yard.
And, you know. Yeah, they chew on them like jawbreakers.
And they love me for it. You know, I give them the wilders. You know,
I know. They look up at you and they give you one of these.
I swear they sell dope, man. There's no way. No, they're home all the time. They have those nice little satin slippers. They have to be custom with little cloven hooves. Come on. You can't go to Burlington and get shoes like that.
No. I saw a couple of them on Saturday. We were out and about showing the countryside to my cousin had brought her little granddaughter with her, and we went out to a family cemetery where my grandmother and grandfather and a bunch of other relatives are buried, and walked up toward the top of the knoll, and beyond the barbed wire fence there, you know, there was a fence line of pine trees to kind of denote the cemetery line, but it also provided us a little bit of cover. And so, I mean, not 15 feet away from me was a 4-point buck, still in velvet. And he turned around and he turned. He wasn't bothered at all. He was like, "Nah, it's wrong time of year. You don't have a gun, dumbass." And so he just turned around and looked at me and went, and bounded away, you know, 9-foot leaps and stuff.
And they're athletes.
Oh yeah, and you know, people have their gardens out, and I noticed that most of them, they would use woven wire for the garden around the base, of the perimeter of their garden.
What is that?
You know, it's like chicken wire.
Oh, okay.
Just tight weave chicken wire, woven wire, and they put that at the bottom, and that's for the rabbits. And then they keep going up, and they put single strands up to about 9 feet tall. You got to have a ladder to string this stuff, because that's to stop the deer.
Right. Oh, they got me one year. It's just a salad bar to them. But they have a nice, I'm serious, there's a nest. They're around. They walk around at night, but they're not scared of us anymore. They're not scared.
There's all those hillbilly remedies for protecting your garden. Like, you go to your barber and you ask him for a big bag of human hair, and you scatter human hair around your garden. Yeah, I find that kind of repugnant. But yeah, howdy, Bob. Just came by for a bag of hair.
Like, what are you gonna, like? Are you going out the trash?
And then there's the, you're supposed to pee all around your garden, but I've found that that gets the law called. And that the deer will be put off by the scent of human urine.
I believe that. But Yeah, you don't want to. You know, that's some crazy stuff, man. I've heard these stories where people will get like a.
But you know, the only thing, the only thing that really works.
What?
Electricity.
Oh, well, see, you sound like a goddamn Nazi.
Nah, I quit that. No, I mean, if you're going to put it, look, if you're going to put in the kind of work that I put in to do a, you know, a third of an acre garden, it's
oh, that's different.
It's downright demoralizing to walk out the next morning and see that, you know, a couple of hundred dollars worth of plants that you put in are just gone. And so,
well,
and so you do it semi-humanely. You, and I told this story before. You string your you put up your posts. You string your electric, you know, your insulators on the posts and everything. And you don't even have to put it up to that 9 foot level like those folks did because you got current going to it. And once you know it works and everything, you unplug it again. This is important. You unplug it, and then you walk all the way around the perimeter, high and low, and you paint that wire with peanut butter.
Oh, that only eats one once they do that, right?
Yeah, that's because there is not an animal. That peanut butter is the universal animal delight.
Damn right. The mice love it. People love it. Come on, everybody
and
loves
so
peanut butter.
Once you've painted that wire, you plug it back in, get that current running through that peanut butter too, and the deer will come in, you know, making them deer grunts.
Yep.
And they'll stick that deer tongue out because that peanut butter is irresistible. And
like,
and then they get a nice dose, and they don't want to come back to your garden anymore.
No, they'll go eat the kudzu.
Because when you've seen a garden just destroyed by deer, they cease to be these cute, adorable little things, and you know you hear the Tchaikovsky when you see them.
They're a nuisance.
No, they are rats with antlers.
They are. Listen, I know what you're talking. I won't say listen, but I yes, because the thing is, once they get started eating that good, you know, the tops of your nice bell peppers or whatever you're growing,
they will browse anything.
And then they don't want to leave. I mean, they don't even, they look at you, I'm like, get out. And they just stand there. They don't even care because they're like, I'm not leaving this food.
Oh, I had a neighbor one time said, listen, I'll just get under your building there. You let me have the meat. I'll just get under the building there. You know what I'll do? I'll bring my little 30-30 carbine, and I'll put a baby bottle nipple on the end of it for a muzzle break. And I'll just sit there and clean them out, and you won't call the game warden. And you won't have no deer problem no more. And I said, there is a house within 500 feet of it. I'm a good shot.
No, he was serious. I'm a good shot.
Yes, he was serious. All right, if the 30-30 bothers you, I'll use 22. I'm a good shot. I can take him right in the heart. We don't eat the heart anyway.
They ain't but 50 yards away. I'm going
to
hit it.
Yeah, don't even need no scope.
It's right there.
And that baby bottle nipple, it don't sound like nothing but a firecracker.
Oh, listen, I have a new neighbor up the street, and he's from West Virginia. He's recovering from that opioid shit.
Oh, man, you got a Bumpus?
Man, and he showed me his gun cabinet yesterday. Oh, my God. He has more guns than both of us have fingers and toes between us. He's got all kinds of fucking guns.
Well, of course, like, you know, because this is for squirrel season, and this one is for varmints, and this one is for deer, and this here shotgun is for turkey. The 10-gauge is for goose hunting. And then I got a 357 mag with a small scope on it. That's for when I go out west cougar hunting, because that's what you know when you really want to challenge your manhood. What you do is you go out west and go cougar hunting with a 357 pistol, with 6 rounds and a tiny scope.
You know this person? He has a 357. He has this big ass chrome. He's got everything. I think he has a Desert Eagle.
I would not be
this
surprised.
This dude has got And then he's got a flintlock, like you know, he's got some guns that were passed
well,
down.
Well, that's right, because yeah, you know, there's a black powder season for a reason.
He's nice as hell. I go up there.
Friendly, you know, friendly neighborhood gun owner.
Yeah, but I just don't want to see the guns anymore. I'm dumb, you know. I'm like, damn, that's a lot of guns, man, and they're not locked up. I'm like, that's just a lot of guns.
The thinking is, if somebody's willing to come in there and go after the guns, you probably gonna shoot them with one of them.
Yeah, that's just what he showed me. Exactly. So, you know, in the bedroom, he's got, who knows if he's got
but
the bedroom.
Right, but then you got the dumbasses who put this house protected by Smith & Wesson on their front porch, which is an advertisement of whole lot of immediately liquefiable assets in this house. Come on in, steal them all.
Hillbilly currency, right?
Yeah, so. Damn right. In the South and in Appalachia, guns are more liquid than goddamn gold.
Man, and then with the meth and the guns, holy cow. Hey, So the prisons, I mean, it's like, how come people can't do simple addition that where you're not really using numbers, but you're using, like, concepts? Like, you know, we shouldn't have privatized prisons because they're going to cut corners. Because their whole thing is to make money.
Well, but taxpayers don't want to pay money for prisons because they don't want to pay money for prisons because prisoners ain't worth it. And that's why our entire penal system is nothing but criminal road scholarships.
Man,
you know, you go in, you do a 2-year hit, you come out with your associates in criminality. You reoffend, you go back in, you come out with 4 years, you got your bachelor's in crook. Then you go in for your third term, and you come out with your master's and your PhD in criminal behavior. Because you know, this country has a punishment fetish. That's why we like to shit on poor people. And it all runs backwards, Todd, to that nasty old business of neo-Calvinism. You know, I had that story, what, last night of the asshole member of the West Virginia State Senate who posted that bigoted screed against gay people in the Parkersburg paper, and he starts out with a quote from a nasty old piece of shit named D. James Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed to be a Presbyterian, and he wore the robes and everything, and he stood in the pulpit, and he had the flapping sleeves like a murder of crows, and all he ever did was hoot and holler about how other people have sex.
Why is he worried about what other people are doing?
Because it was good for business. I mean, the amounts of money that have been raised for the religion industry off of a resistance to Brown versus Board of Education, then resistance to Roe versus Wade, and now resistance to the gay community... That's how they got as rich as they are. The church in America wasn't nearly as wealthy before Brown versus Board of Education as they were afterward. I left one out there. They also fundraised the hell out of Madeline Murray O'Hare and the issue of state-sponsored prayer in schools.
Mm-hmm.
But the you know, we talk about tax the church and everything. All these churches have all this wealth because of hate. Nobody goes into a church and gives money. I mean, yeah, okay, some do. They'll give some money for, oh, I don't know, buying diapers for sick babies in a concentration camp. But you know, that's your sissy liberal churches. That's your Episcopals and your United Churches of Christ and Metropolitan churches and stuff like that. Your Baptist and your Church of Christ and your hardcore Methodists and your Presbyterian USA types, they give money based on who they hate.
Man, that Church of Christ around here, the folks that I see going to that type of church, they're straight, clean-looking people. I don't know who they are. I'm not
Wait, wait, wait. What kind of looking people?
Klan-looking
people. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. No, well, they are. They are. And that's the bunch that doesn't allow so much as a kazoo through the door for singing. Everything's a cappella.
Hmm. Well.
And ain't no dancing.
Yeah, tax-free thing. So, all right, you know, Yep. So, these kids, man, the concentration camps, okay?
Yeah.
Are these people thinking, the people in charge now, they're under scrutiny. We know this is like a money-making enterprise because we know they started scheming on this even before it started. You know, they've been scheming on this. They were like, oh, we got to... All right, so we acquiesced to prison reform, but now we're going to have to make up these profits another way. You know, here you come.
And
with these profits.
Yeah.
So, but my thing is that we should be wondering, are they not thinking this through? Because, in the midst of all this, these people trying to make money, you know, number one is ethnicide, because, you know, these folks are coming from different places. And when you separate people, you know, just because they speak a form of Spanish, that means they're all related. It doesn't mean they all have the same cultures. So when you separate these people, some of them come from the hills, some of them are from Guatemala, Ecuador, you know, New Mexico, a spattering. But there's a whole lot going on there. You know, and when these kids don't know where they're from, they're traumatized, they're going to feel alienated. But they're all going to know, oh, I was a concentration camp baby. And they're going to be in like gangs because some of those kids are going to stay here. Are they thinking this shit through? This is like a terrorism incubator. Because it's, I mean, anyone who knows anything about social science knows that these kids are traumatized.
Sure.
And because of the way the media is, as they get older.
And they're going to know who traumatized them.
Well, exactly. You know, this is the bullshit, man. This is so stupid. These people are just greedy. You know, come on, man. Like, you don't have enough. These people don't have enough money. They're going to come back, man, in 13, 15 years. Let's say you got a six-year-old. All right, what, 15 years? Oh. You know, it's going to be ugly. Because lights on all the time.
You mean the chickens are going? You mean the chickens are going? Oh, see, there was a clip, and I resisted the urge to play it. Meghan McCain had a little baby on The View today.
Was it a boy or a girl?
It was a conniption.
Okay.
Because she's tired of hearing people say that these concentration camps down there with these little children in it are torture centers. That's just wrong, because her daddy was tortured and couldn't pick her up above his head because of how he was tortured, and it's not fair to her daddy to say that these babies are being tortured by being forced to sleep on concrete floors in freezing rooms with the lights on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and being screamed at by the guards because her daddy was tortured. And wait a minute, that's torture. That's what they did to her daddy. No shit. She had a hissy on the air, because it's as a conservative Republican, I don't like it when they call these things torture centers. My daddy was tortured.
See, these motherfuckers need to shut up. I'm sorry. It is torture. It is torture. These children, come on. One of the lawyers. I mean, it's all over the news now. She was like, She was like, she must have had training, because she was like, I was trying to get as close as I could so I could get the real story out of these children. But the stench was so bad that she had trouble. And remember, children need human contact.
Yeah, one of the women who did this was interviewed on CNN, And I don't think they were crocodile tears. She just teared up trying to talk about it. Because she saw it up close. But see, if a maggot had done that, there would be no tears, because those are not babies worth caring about to a maggot. Now, never mind the fact that they are almost exclusively Christians, because they're coming from Roman Catholic Central American countries. But see, the maggots don't care about that either, because your average Methodist and Methodist and Southern Baptist and Church of Christ and Pentecostal and Apostolic Holiness and whatnot maggot will tell you that that means they're not really Christians. They're Catholics. There's a difference. Those are Mary worshipers. Those are idolaters and mackerel snappers.
Yeah, because they burn the incense and the Pope is funny and he wears those funny shoes.
Yep, right.
But see, this is a problem. Religion should be a private thing. I mean, it just causes trouble.
And you struck a nerve with Darlene. Darlene just wrote in and said, "These poor kids in the ICE concentration camps are our future domestic terrorists. It's happening right under our noses, and the Republicans don't get it. They can't see the causal connection." Well, you know, I don't know, Darlene, that they don't get it. They just flat can't be bothered to give a damn. And then if it turns out that that is our future with terrorism, well, good, because that just means they'll get to kill them some more. On the other hand, we talked about Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags resigning. There's been another Sanders called it quits. Acting Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection John Sanders is knocking off as of July the 5th.
Why is that?
We don't really know. Writing a letter to employees of the agency on his resignation, Sanders said, "I will leave it to you to determine whether I was successful. I can unequivocally say that helping support the amazing men and women of CBP has been the most fulfilling and satisfying opportunity of my career. People embraced and welcomed me in a way that was new to me, in a way that was truly special. To this day, I get choked up when speaking about it, and I can't adequately express my thanks. I, on the other hand, don't get choked up about thinking about little months or barely years old babies wallowing in their own filth on freezing concrete floors somewhere in a concentration camp in Texas. I don't get choked up at that." I added down that last part.
See, I'm glad you said the B word, because this concerns me. This is the entree into this bullshit. Beds. There is no goddamn way in America you're going to get a bid and submit an invoice for a facility and you don't have beds. So they're getting paid for beds. So where's the money or where are the beds? Why are these human beings on the floor?
And meanwhile, the maggots, shut them screaming babies up. We're over here listening for a fetal heartbeat.
This is ridiculous. You know, if they want to go down that road, then how come we don't, everyone...
Them babies want to cry, I'll give them a reason to cry. I'll give them crumbs. Them babies want to scream, I'll give them something to scream about.
And you know they have a gun for you, because it's a weird how they're all the gun folk, man, for some reason. I don't understand. It's just crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Why can't them little babies pull themselves up by their boom bootstraps? By God, whatever happened to personal responsibility in America? Damn straight we ought to have 7 year
olds. You ever seen them boots on Mexicans?
Damn straight we ought to have 7 year olds raising and taking care of and changing the diapers a little 6 and 9 months old. That's how it's supposed to be. That's what personal responsibility's about. That's what a free market economy means. That's capitalism, by God, and that's what makes America great. Isn't it sickening how easy I can just do that?
Well, no, it's not, because that's what you hear. You're absorbing it. I mean, you know, it's not sickening. It's reality. We hear it every day. These are the same folks who don't want us to have health care. You know, Well, we're looking at the president and his transgressions, and this criminal attorney general, his department is trying to make sure that you don't have health care. You know, while all this other shit is going on, he's suing so that you don't have health care. Yeah. Your wife does not have health care.
Quietly going after Social Security, too. Did you know that?
I don't know anything about that, no.
Yeah, it's real. Let me see where it is.
No, I'm not surprised, but, you know, I don't have a whole lot of confidence. And I'm going to tell you, we're going to lose this election. I feel like we're going to lose this election. This is bullshit. There's too many people running. The message is diluted. I remember Hart. You know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. All it's going to take is for Joe to say one or touch somebody wrong or do something stupid, and then that's it. And remember, we still have meddling, home field advantage. You know, I'm talking about the other side of the ledger. Meddling, home field advantage. And the people that like him, their votes count more than our votes. So we can't have all this disarray, this bullshit that's going on now. This is nonsense. They're not serious. This is the most important election in our lifetime. This motherfucker has changed the face of democracy in this country.
And the $64 question is whether, having changed it, we can undo it.
What do you think?
I don't think this country's ever going to be the same.
Have you been drinking?
No, I'm sadly sober. I don't think this country's ever going to be the same. Because I think he has opened doors that cannot be closed. I think as was the case with George W. Bush, the only thing we're going to wind up having to be grateful for is the fact that he was too stupid, too ignorant, too incurious to fully be able to enact his agenda. But I've said it before, say it again. I warn you, I warn everybody. There's a Republican out there who knows how to do all this and knows how to smile and not rape. And not talk about people wearing a wardrobe. And that person has presidential ambitions. And, you know, and some of this I say because I'm merely looking at history. And I know.
What do you mean, though? What do you mean? I mean, what is the import of that? I mean, how does it fit in?
Because it has been proven to us that the Constitution is functionally meaningless, as long as no one wants to enforce its mechanisms. It's Tinkerbell. If you don't believe in it, it fucking dies, and all the clapping in the world won't bring it back. So So the way the emoluments business is running means that it means that you can have an imperial president who makes money off of everything, who sells the government by the ounce. The lack of impeachment says that as long as one political party sides with the president, impeachment is a hollow act at best, because it is not going to result in anything, in any. It means that even if you've got somebody who's shooting people in Lafayette Park, you cannot take them out. You cannot remove them from office. The 25th Amendment has already been proven to be an abject failure, Todd, because it presumed that at some point in time, a cabinet might look up and say, no, he's gone. We got to put the vice president in charge. But it obviously does not work. And then there's that clause we've talked about, or such other body as Congress may by law provide. Congress has had since, what, 1965 to provide that body and has not bothered to. And those are Democratic Congresses and Republican Congresses. And nobody ever, even during Reagan's presidency, nobody said, hey, maybe we ought to provide for a body. Maybe we need a commission.
And he wasn't functioning.
Maybe we need a commission on presidential fitness.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like that should be bipartisan. In other words, some legislation that could come forward. Everyone should be able to agree that in 20, we're moving into 2020. All right, we're out of black.
If they were to come up with the body, the oath would be something like, I swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and render my decisions without regard to politics whatsoever, so help me God. Because, I mean, it had a real impact on me when I went and I read the oath that was sworn by the senators in the Clinton impeachment trial. There was no oath that they would not take politics into account. That they would merely judge the evidence based upon what was put before them.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that all parties should be able to agree at this point in human history, because of what we know about the human mind and the technology that we have, is that there should be a full neurological exam, which means an MRI. All right, live time.
Well, but I don't think you do that on the front end. I think constitutionally you can only do it if there is some evidence of an inability of the president to fulfill the duties of the office, because that's the way the 25th Amendment is written. So if it gets to the point where the president has to be examined, then...
Why can't we examine a future president for fitness? Fitness is not just one thing. I mean, we are able to physically see through blood flow.
there's no mechanism for doing that, and it would probably involve amending the Constitution. Oh dear Jesus! But there is a mechanism that is provided for in Section 4 of the 25th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And the question then becomes, what happens if the body provided for by law by Congress issues a statement? Well, what if they say, Mr. President, we're the Presidential Fitness Commission, and we think you need an MRI. Uh-uh. I mean, I know, I'm guessing, you've had some experience with people who are, for reasons of dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever, not entirely home.
Right.
You ever try?
They'll deny it until, and not only that, in the laboratory. Remember, I used to screen people. One of the last projects I worked on.
Why I said that.
And I've administered the puff test. I've seen these people in action. I mean, and they're very. It can be, you know, sometimes folks are defiant. And it's strange, but it depends on what kind of data you're having, you know, because you have to screen people. And remember, attrition is a terrible thing for a research study. Like, you don't want to lose subjects, right? The animal subjects, you know, it doesn't matter because you make them do what, you know, you need to do. But human subjects, you know, it's a different story. And retaining a human subject in a study, you know, that's a big deal. God, that's the whole damn thing. You have to retain subjects. And you have to be very careful because you don't know what kind of data you're having. And, you know, it's very, you know.
Or whether it's a, you know, a good morning or a bad evening.
Exactly.
Sundown syndrome.
I mean, you have to, like, whoa, they'll come at you.
So the larger point here, and we've run over, but I want to kind of put a nice little bow on all of this. The larger point here is that with every one of these issues relating to the fitness of the president, sooner or later you run up against an enforcement problem. I mean, even if you had 67 votes in the Senate to remove the president from office, how do you make him go? He's the commander-in-chief of the goddamn military.
He said he doesn't want to go.
And meanwhile, he is, no kidding, madder than a hatter. Somebody asked him about war with Iran, and his response was,
I don't do exit strategies.
What?
I mean,
I don't understand where we're going.
We're trying to push them into a war. If you want to get a really, really good handle on it, go and look up the Second Punic War. Third Punic War.
Yeah, I'm not, because the
Romans boxed in the Carthaginians, and then they started ginning up a reason to go back to war with them to finish them off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was the same model that was used for Iraq, and most people have no idea that thing was being played out again. But I don't do exit strategies.
And I want to thank you, because I know one evening we were talking about Constan, you know, and his mentor, his name started with a D. You know, I was somewhat defending him only because, you know, but you were kind enough not to push back too hard on me, even though you probably should have, maybe. But, you know, this era, we're living through some serious fucking history right now.
We are watching, and of course, because nobody puts up blinking neon lights, you know, the date 476 AD that was sort of selected by Gibbon as the date of the fall of the Roman Empire. Well, the Roman Empire continued to thrive in the East. He was talking about the Western Roman Empire, and he sort of applied that date arbitrarily. There was an event, and so that was, but yeah, okay. And what we're watching, I'm convinced of it, we are watching the sunset of what passed for the American Republic.
Mm-hmm.
We are moving toward, and we've been at for a while, a quasi-imperial presidency, and we're going to move toward a downright royal imperial presidency, you know, where you cannot touch the person of the king. And where you cannot criticize the person of the king. And where prerogatives that were formerly assigned constitutionally to other branches of government will be inexorably concentrated in the hands of the king, or the god emperor, or whatever we're going to call him. And, you know, you'll move toward a hereditary event,
right?
Where kingship passes from parent to child. I mean, like,
months ago, you mentioned that.
And remember that Alexander Hamilton almost lost the Constitution over his argument that the United States should have a hereditary king.
Yep.
In a sort of a Roman form where the king would name his heir. I secretly suspect that Alexander Hamilton was hoping that he could toady up to George Washington enough to get himself named heir, because George had no children of his own.
There's no real proof that he was particularly fond of women, but we'll leave that for another day. But the thing is, we and the Roman Empire did the same thing. Moved toward making the person of the emperor not just the first among equals, but superior to.
Right.
And I think about, for instance, just to name names, I think about Tom Cotton out of Arkansas, James Lankford out of Oklahoma.
Did you hear him this weekend?
And he scares me.
And I think he has some sugar in his tank, and he don't want to admit it. Something's going on with him.
The one who scares me the most, because he looks like he's got all the necessary attributes to pull it off, is that new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse from Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he uses hip talk like, let's unpack this. And he's got a PhD, and gosh, he understands things. And yeah,
what's his endeavor? What is his PhD?
Offhand, I don't know, and I don't. But he's a student. He's a scholar, and he explains. And that sucker, if you turned him loose with power, would go absolutely crazier than a sprayed rope.
Well, see, this is the thing, and it's almost too late, because we're halfway through this presidency. Our institutions have been disassembled.
Hollowed out. Yeah.
And let's
be clear, the potential for demagoguery and power hunger exists on both sides. I think there are a few candidates on the Democratic side who probably their following can be described as almost cultish.
Mm-hmm.
And could be problematic, but nothing compared to the potential that exists on the Republican side.
Oh, no. You predicted this, and I thought it was folly at first, but no, I see it now. Because and think about this, and I know you have to go, but think. Let's look linear in a straight line.
Yeah, linearly.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Welcome.
So we had this phony bullshit with the attack on that ship, which the witnesses, the motherfuckers who were there.
Yeah. Said it was a missile.
Oh, no, it was a projectile. And remember, a missile doesn't necessarily have to have an explosive warhead on the front of it. It can just be, you know, just a missile, which is what happened. A hole. When the people who were there said that. It was airborne. They said that shit. It's like, nobody's making this up.
It cut a big ass hole in the boat.
Exactly. With no explosives. How the fuck do you do that with no casualties? No, ship didn't sink, no explosion. Duh, means it didn't have a warhead on it.
Yeah, it's just, so, it's a hole punch. It's a nail.
It's a hole punch. It's a, right, exactly. 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 It's right. So, let's start there. So, okay, fine. All right, so.
Don't you think if the Iranians wanted to screw up the Straits of Hormuz, they'd actually like to sink a ship there? How is it that all these ships got attacked, but they were not terminally attacked? They were unsunk.
Because they're not fucking with us. They could jam our communications. There's so many different ways.
Because they did not want the ships to sink.
No, they did not. That's the whole, right.
If you're Saudi Arabia, if you're the UAE, if you're the United States, you don't want those ships to sink, because that creates a bigger problem than what you were trying to start.
There's enough problems out there. All right, so last Thursday or Friday, it was one blurb and they dropped it. NPR reported there was an independent
commission out of Switzerland. And they did all the coordination, like electronic coordinates. They said that drone was in international waters. It was not over Iran.
And yet, if you heard Gary calling last night, there's some the numbers don't add up or don't appear to.
No.
And you
why do you have grainy photo in 2019?
Well, because
grainy photo anyway.
Because if you have a nice high resolution photo, you might see the Made in Saudi Arabia labels. I don't trust those dirt bags. I'm sorry. I just don't.
We can't. All right. So, Todd, we got to
get out of here. We got to save some of this for another evening.
I know. All right. I'm sorry, man.
No worries. Don't apologize. And the conversations just go in a lot of different and interesting directions. I'm glad you called.
Well, I'm glad you're back home safely.
All right. Thanks a lot, Todd. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Later. Bye. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And that's the way conversation radio is supposed to work. It's for no time checks. Time to get out of here. Thanks very kindly to Tom in the Bay Area who just let me know that he's jumping in alongside. So we're done with fundraising and we're to the good. Thank you very much, Tom. Thanks a bunch. And happy retirement at the end of the year. Well earned indeed. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation, however you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening in the chat room to Steve and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years, this year, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.